All right. Welcome, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I am Joe Danier, and we have this time on Saturday to talk about things with small business and enterprisers and those of you who are, you know, entertaining the idea that you're going to take something that maybe you do as a hobby and convert it into something that is, you know, a full-fledged business. We got side hustles that we talk about, whether or not you got a small business, you're scaling up to a bigger enterprise with hiring and compliancy and just about everything else you can think of, whatever challenges or things that, you know, occupy the brain cycles, we have a chance to talk about here on the weekends. We have a lot of people in this audience from lots of different industries, and so maybe something, you know, is not in an industry that I'm familiar with. We can always volley your questions or those things at the general audience, and there's somebody out there that will answer or guide or direct. We get lots of good feedback all program long. So 330-729-9977 is the phone number. You can also text the program, and I will read those text messages. A lot of you wait until the very end of the show to text in, and I don't have enough time, so I end up having to circle back after the show and do last week's questions at the end. So try to get them in a little sooner today, and I'll read them on the program. The text number, 330-333-1570. I had a great weekend off last week toward the Northeast, New England area. I had to headed to Boston, and what I like doing when I'm in other when I'm in other demographics or different areas, different parts of the country, is to sit back and be an observer how business functions in those areas. You know, what are they doing that we're not doing here? What do they have access to that we don't have here? And it's, you know, a lot of the same. And that's why everybody who leaves here and dabbles in other parts of the country always says, man, I love Youngstown. I love where I live. It's just the greatest segments of everything. Now, like, you know, people don't necessarily travel into here. We're not a tourist destination. But we have the ability to do all that. There just hasn't been a person that piped up and said, hey, you know what? I want a guy traveling down Interstate 80 to pop into the Youngstown area and check out things to see. Because that's exactly what I did when I went into Boston. The first thing I did is, you know, what to see when I'm in Boston, right? Check out the internet and find out what historical sites are out there. And I bopped around based on what I found on the internet to do that. And I found some really cool gems doing that. Well, you do the same thing with Youngstown. And, you know, is the stuff that lists up good enough to be able to track someone off of the interstate to start moving around your city, checking things out? And again, you know, through what we do, which is, you know, we take a product, to take something that we can do, take an ability or a product, and we line it up with a demand. And sometimes that you line it up with a naturally occurring demand, and sometimes you have to create the demand. And I think that a lot of our communities are doing a really good job at facilitating end products. You know, cities and governments and municipalities have never been known for their, you know, excellence in end product. But I think a lot of our smaller communities are doing a really good job of catering to the, not just the needs of their communities, their constituents, their, you know, the population. But, you know, they are concerned about doing a really good job. Struthers is one of those examples. We have a bunch of events planned that we're going to cooperate with the city of Struthers. This morning I went around and I was putting signs in the ground for the movie night that we're having there. Now, this is a super small operation. It's a marketing operation for our studio. And basically what we're doing is we're fronting sort of like we're playing a movie in the park. So we're fronting the entertainment and the visuals and the audio. And then the city is providing the space to do it and the access to the, you know, to their infrastructure. And it is like it's everything that you would probably, you know, that you would wish and want for a community to do, for, you know, the administration to be looking out and wanting to provide something for the citizens to do on a Friday night. I just think it's a beautiful marrying of government, public, you know, private. And it's, you know, the end product is going to be just superb. So I think that's going to be a pretty cool event. But like I said, when I was in Boston, I'm looking around and say, okay, well, they got tourism here. What could we do to bring tourism? We've got, you know, these centers for food and entertainment, and we've got these great industrial centers. And I'm thinking, everything that I've seen mentioned, that's not anything different than what we have, you know, back home. I just think that maybe they do a better job telling our story. And that's what we are going to absolutely work on. If we want to, we got to get better at narrating and saying things that are true. I mean, we're really good at pointing out our blemishes, but we're not as good at highlighting and bragging when something's good. I mean, there's a few of us. I think Derek McDowell and Phil Kidd, and what Tim Ryan and what we've done down at the Business Incubator, we do tell a really good story about innovations that happen. But I think if you went around and asked the feeling for the general population, what resonates here is the drama and negativity when things go south. And I'm putting all of my effort into sort of changing that dynamic so that we're not so quick to do that. I will go and defend people that are trying to get something done. We're going to get some stinkers in there. That's just part of the gig. When you're innovating, there's always going to be stuff that doesn't go quite right. I mean, if you looked at me for a period of time and you took all of the things I attempted to do and all the things I was doing, like, you're going to see a lot of successes, and you're going to feel the resonance of the successes. But there's some stinkers in there that they just didn't get any energy. But what would happen if I had someone inside my walls that every time something went south, that they went out and ran a campaign on everything that ran south? Then you would associate our company and our people of running these operations that just go south. So that's how powerful the story that you tell is to your operations. It gives a sense for the general public that they associate you with things that go well or not. And again, what we do and what we preach. And I'm not saying that we're less objective because we're doing it. The media and the people who report this stuff, they're basically telling you what you will read. If they wrote stories that highlighted great things and you didn't buy their paper, well, they're going to not write things. So you almost have to have the general public become more attracted and become more supportive of things that happen, and then the media will fall in line with what you want to read and what you want to hear, because it's just a product. You can't expect a media to tell a story that is not – there's no demand for, right? Do you want to hear about feel-good stories, or are you quick to open up when something's on fire? I mean, I'll tell you. But it takes someone to take a stand and say, well, that's not good for you. I mean, it might be cool to read, and it might get your attention, but, that just gets – I call it the Britney Spears effect. Like, you get sort of like a shock value out of something, but then it doesn't shock you anymore because you get used to it, and then you'll have to get something that's more shocking. And so the media goes down that rabbit hole where you will need more shocking material. I went to Las Vegas one time, and I did business over there. And I was sitting in a hotel room, and I was watching TV. And a car commercial came on in Las Vegas, and the person was literally dressed up screaming at the camera. And I was thinking, this is absurd. I would never buy a car from someone who was screaming at me and dressed up like an absurd character that they were dressed up as, right? And then I thought about this a little while, and why is that? Well, it's the Britney Spears effect. And it is that there are so many absurdities in Las Vegas, and everything is so bright and everything is so noisy. To catch your attention in a city that everything is there to catch your attention, you have to outdo. So that guy wasn't screaming at me through the TV because he was, a crazy person. He did it in order to stand out. He had to be louder than the guy that was just on before him, which meant that he had to be a crazy person. And so I'm, that's my little monologue for what business can do for the community, is that I have to address both of you. I love capitalism. I love business. I think when wielded properly, it does such good. And I also know people, and I love people, and I know that I want best for people. And so, but two things aren't at odds. And my entire business career, there's always a segment that wants to pit those two against one another. We're at best when you have people who are, using the leverage of capital to grow bigger things, and you know what the pros and cons of that are, and you have the people and the labor and those who are actually making this stuff function, and you know what the pros and cons of that are. It only becomes stupid when you start saying like one is noble and one is the villain. And so I appreciate you guys letting me get that off my chest a little bit, but we do have. I got mad a couple years ago, and maybe 5-6 years ago, And I was reading a news story on the Vindicator before, when it was the true Vindicator, the brick and mortar Vindicator. And there was a story about, it was during Christmas, and there was a church that was putting together gifts for underprivileged. And it got robbed, right? Over a weekend, the church got robbed and all of the gifts were stolen. And then the parishioners, the people that went to that church, they replaced all the toys from what was got robbed. So you had three components. You had doing something great for underprivileged, you had the robbery, and then you have those that came together and did it all again in spite of that. So what do you think the article was? It was the first part was, oh, it's really nice, and then lots of drama about the negative side, and then a footnote that everybody replaced it. And I got that made me a little bit upset that we'd frame it that way, that we made the most amount of out of the negativity. And the reason I'm bringing this up, I mean, you heard me talk about the Chilcan facility. You heard me talk about Lordstown Motors. And, you know, I am an observer and an objective viewer, right? I want what's best for our community. I want what's best for our people here. I want to grow. I want to add jobs. I want people to make more money. I want people to pursue happiness. I want everybody to get stronger and better and faster, right? If you're on my team, that is the outlook and the objective of what it is that we do. I do not pick a favorite to where that's going to come. I have not decided where that growth and where that strength is going to come from. So if it comes from somebody that I don't know, I'm totally cool with that because they're pushing on the objectives of what I'm trying to push on, right? So you're not going counter to me, you're going with me. Now, when something does go south and something doesn't, like the Chilcan thing, I want that to work. It's an innovative product that I think you could see in all kind of, amusement parks you'll probably see them at sports arenas and, you know, baseball fields. It's a perfect part of that. So I would love to have manufacturing here. So when you tell that story, is it still even possible? I don't know. I mean, it sounds like, government has kind of turned their back. The populace obviously has turned their back. And I don't necessarily think the company has the same verve to put it in Youngstown that they once did. But that's the kind of stuff where I'm like, okay, well, we went south and we stayed south. This is probably as toxic as you get for an opportunity. Is it even worth worth doing anymore? And that's what I want to stop from happening. I want somebody with level head not to get political and not get emotional about this. This is, I haven't had one thing that I've ever tried that went as planned, right? It did go south. A lot of them went south. A lot of them, I did stupid things. A lot of them were stupid timing. A lot of them, I ran out of money. A lot of them, I didn't have the right people in my organization, right? And all it would have taken was someone to come along and poke holes in what I was doing. And then once you get the emotional rush of now it's counter, you got two people in opposition, what are the likelihood that something is going to come out of it now? So it's current path. Nothing happens. Everybody gets sued. Everybody's feelings hurt. And you got a couple of vacant buildings that now we get to look at and say, see what happens? Or somebody steps in before that happens and says, hey, let's let business solve this. Let's let the population or the public solve this. Let's let the government solve this and say, okay, well, hey, this went a little bit wrong. But I don't think anybody wants to have that egg on their face. And that's why we're so quick to just like dismantle ourselves when it looks like it's going south. But we need more people in there that will stand in there, take some barbs at it, and defend it. And I'm not saying that I don't know. I've asked the company with the Chilcan company to come talk to me and let's tell the story and let's unearth it. And it was already after the defenses came out for the lawsuit came out with the city. So I, at that point, you know, when it's under litigation, it's very little hope that anybody could talk about it without, you know, hurting their chances when they end up doing court. So that just sours me a little bit. And that's what brought on this little tirade, from my end. So I appreciate you letting me spill that out. I do believe even the companies that are struggling, the companies that are strong, whether it be automotive, whether it be manufacturing, services, it's all important to this area. None are better than the other. I do not want us to consolidate and have a big, a big employer come in here and overinvest in that one employer. I'm not opposed to it. I'd love big employers to come here, but I don't want us to stop when we get a you know, a 10,000 person employer that comes through like GM was at one time. I want us to keep adding to that. Growth is, you know, a perpetual thing. It doesn't stop when you get to comfort. It keeps going. When you're innovators, you got to go right through comfort and keep plowing through, because my objectives will never be met here. You will never have property values high enough or pay rates high enough. And I want authentic, I want to be so good at everything that we do here that you never have to worry about how quickly you go to the bottom, right? And that's why I think we're defending one inch above the bottom and okay with that. We get to comfortable one inch from dying and we're complacent that way. But anyway, thank you for, I appreciate you letting me dedicate that segment to that rant. 330-729-9977, or you can text me at 333-1570. You're listening to the Bottom Line Business Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. It is such name that we dig through the emotion, and it's about the bottom line. It's about the truth. It's about the uncovering of the crap that sort of surrounds it and just fighting for that overall truth. And it's a little bit idealistic. I will tell you that, it's one part logical energy and the other part, I just want so much great things for so many great things for the people of this valley. And we have access to literally everything that's necessary to deliver that. So I got on my soapbox pretty hard and heavy today. But just join Joe's team and help fight for everyone. The companies that are prospecting us and looking at us as a home. And then the people who we have superior talent in this area, like it's nobody's business. So I appreciate that. 330-729-9977. You can text also at 330-333-1570. Hiring. And so this question comes up quite a bit about, especially post-COVID, what people are doing as far as hiring. So I have this theory. And the question is basically, how do I find employees because a lot of our restaurants and a lot of our companies here are struggling to find workers. And, you know, it became a political issue. I don't see it as a political issue. Here's sort of the natural ebb and flow of labor here. So think about it this way, that this is all going to sort of hash out and be a little bit better for it. There's going to be some struggles, all right? But every time you shake up status quo, you get this weird, you know, vacuum space that we're in right now. Think about it this way. So what happened? You basically took unemployment and you took some people out of the workforce and they were at home during the pandemic, right? And so now the companies that have reopened are looking for staffing. So what's happening is there are less employees in the market, and now you have desire, you have demand for those employees. So have you seen some industries have offered pretty good signing bonuses and extra money to attract people to them, to their companies. So I'm looking at maybe you have your different strata of pay as far as workforce goes. And then you have your low end, your entry level positions. And then you have this, each strata above that is a little bit more refined in the skill set and a little bit more pay that goes along with that developed skill set. So what happened was the lower stratas basically climbed into the upper stratas because of that demand and vacancy. So you people improved their professional positions because there was a lack of people. So those people, they stayed in, they weathered it out, and they advanced up. So it created some vacancies on that lowest strata. So now we have to, we basically have to figure what's going to happen next. Either pays are going to increase on the lower strata, right? Where if my restaurant needs to be open and there is nobody showing up to work for me, then I can't be opened and I can't do business. Well, do we want restaurants to be in business? Sure. So then you get to that natural point where I want to be open so much, I'm willing to pay more
And then because I'm willing to pay more, you're able to pay more. And you basically took the lower strata and you naturally increased the pay rate. Had it not happened, you wouldn't have created that vacuum. And then there would be no reason to have wages go up. So this is sort of like the natural version of it, where it has to be that cycle where the consumer has to agree that, hey, yeah, I like you so much. I want to eat at your place. And you don't have staffing? Cool. Well, raise your prices, and then I'm coming in there. And then nobody had to intervene. You didn't have to have a federal mandate, a state mandate. You don't have to anybody do anything except for restaurant wants to be in business. Worker wants to make more money. Consumer wants restaurant to be open. And then the magic happens to make that happen. It's going to take a while for that to unfurl the way that it needs to happen. Okay? And you're going to see the downside of that. There are going to be restaurants that don't open up, and the consumers say, and it's going to be one of those three things. Either the consumers say, well, yeah, I don't want to pay more for that anyway. And then the restaurant owner is going to say, well, I don't want to pay for labor anyway. And then they're just going to go away because they're not following that protocol. But what you can do, the position that you as the consumer can play, is you can support those who are playing that game. You can be very vocal with restaurants and say, hey, Mr. Restaurant, I am willing to pay up more if you use the increased prices to attract a higher paying staffing, and then watch them react. But if you're not vocal about it, because we have this tendency to use this whole thing as a social sort of like a social contention, right? We go after each other. But instead, it should just be like, you know how this works. If you want something that you don't have and you're willing to pay more, it becomes more likely that you're going to have that thing. And that exists in restaurants, it exists in industry, it exists in services that are provided. It all works that way. But when we're like passive aggressive and we're silent, we sit there and stew and we don't share the actual logic, and we get mad and we start taking jabs at people, that's when things really don't happen. So that's what you got to do. Call your favorite restaurants that are open only a couple days and tell them that, hey, if you raise your prices, I'm willing to patronize you even then. 330-729-9977. You're listening to the Bottom Line Business Show, 570 WKBN. I'll be back. All right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I am Joe Danier, and this is a show we could talk about things that are happening with and in small business. I ended that last segment with a question about what do I do about hiring, and I went on a kind of a litany of my predictions about what's going to cycle through over the next couple months. I think by fall, we get back to normal. We have normal entry into the workforce. You may have to pay up in order to attract people. And that is in one sense, it's going to put a little bit of pressure on labor costs, and it's going to be very temporary in nature. But think about what happens when we're able to elevate the labor rates authentically like this. Then we get in the habit of, okay, well, I paid up, and consumers then turned around and paid up, and then strength came because of it. The people who asked me over the last couple of weeks is your entry levels are probably going to go from minimum wage to a couple bucks more. Restaurants are going to be a unique thing because a lot of who were attracted away were restaurant workers. They picked new professions. We had a ton of people who through the computer company, we basically took on a ton of interviews, and resumes came from those industries. So a lot of those places, they didn't have a lot of, they didn't have a lot of, they didn't feel like the restaurant industry was going to bounce back like it was. So they decided, hey, I'm going to retool, going to reskill, retrain, and we're going to move an industry. So that's what we're seeing, is that void in the restaurant industry, that when people have a little bit more faith that it is going to bounce back, then you're going to attract the brand new works. Because the worst thing in the world, when you hear stories of someone who gets trapped in an entry level position and they get stuck there for 10 years. And in the cycle of things, you are supposed to progress. And I think we kind of got things stuck even in the business side, is we let people sit on, the first step way too long. And because they're valuable entry level people are valuable. I love when I get someone fresh out of college or fresh out of school that I get to train and I get to tell them about our principles. I don't have to untrain. I don't have to, you know, talk people out of habits. I love it. It's very valuable. And now on the what it costs me, it's lower. So I can spend a ton more time with someone on the lower end of the labor end. So if you come in and you're making, you know, $25 an hour, there's more pressure on you to perform. You hit the ground and you've got to produce. You've got to be able to hit the ground and get production right where it is. Versus someone who's at $10 an hour, you have some room to be able to, you know, be able to make more efficient, and you have a way of teaching and making more productive. And I always love being able to take somebody who's a little more raw and refine them on our own. So those are real value, but I don't want someone, you know, if somebody came in and they worked at an entry level with me, either I suck at you know, training up and I'm not giving them the skill, or they suck and they're not interested in learning or progressing. And I think we had too many people stuck in those arenas. And I'm really glad that we've shaken it up enough to get kind of back into that more natural, more healthy progression. So to answer your question, you might have to pay up in the short term, and in the long term, it should. If you can get by till fall, your labor costs should probably normalize a little bit. But let's do this. Let's urge it up and maybe see how long we can pay at the premium and see how long the market will lean and support the prices. Because I'm one of those people that during this whole thing, whether it be restaurants or local providers, I was willing to pay more because I knew that they were hitting hardships they normally don't. So I'm going to squeeze, or I'm going to keep supporting while you squeeze things back to normal, and I will tolerate a whole lot until then, as long as it's part of that progression. It's not something that I'm going to do after things have normalized. So they will get back to where, you know, they were before. Okay, so this is another business question that comes up quite a bit about forming an LLC. And you hear a lot of you hear a lot about a lot of companies that will help you formulate an LLC. And so let me explain a little bit about what that does for you. First off, with all of these things, I would absolutely do not take a guy on the radio's advice. You need to have someone who you absolutely trust that will evaluate your business and take a look at it and see if it's right for you. And that's both on the legal side, which it's an LLC is a legal container. And then you have one on the financial. So somebody that does your accounting, does your book work, makes you compliant on that side. They have to say, yes, an LLC is totally for you. But so what an LLC is it's sort of like a liabilities container. And so a liability would be that something that poses a certain amount of risk, that the risk might, you don't want the risk to undo your whole operation. So I believe one of the stories that I read, LLCs came when you had these expeditions where you'd create a ship and cargo and go over the ocean, right? And so the ship and the cargo represented a lot of work or a lot of liability because it could sink, it could get trapped in a storm. You could have total life loss. You could have total product loss. If it worked, it was good. If it didn't work, it was really, really bad. And so in order for, you know, companies to take the risk of shipping and doing this, they created containers that all of the liabilities were inside the container. So if you had a total loss, it just took the things that were inside the container. So if you look at, use that analogy, and you look at your own operations, there's going to be components of your operations that have liability. So if something bad happens in your construction company, do you want to lose your house? Well, probably not. You don't want your house to be at, something goes wrong at the construction company and then they take your whole construction company and then they go after you personally. That's what it does. It creates a separation between you, physical you, and the company. Now, here's upside downside. So the upside of that is that your company takes on its own entity, files its own taxes. It is separate from you and you get that protection. Downside is you've created an entity that is not you. Now, it's a pain in the butt, first off, because now it files its own taxes. It has its own set of circumstances or requirements to keep an LLC. So your liability and risk has to be above a certain level
for you to entertain an LLC. It's not something that you want to come out of the gate and become an LLC when you have $0 in assets, you have $0 in revenue, and you have $0 in the books. Now, there are certain industries that require an LLC, but most of us don't. You can create as an independent operator, a sole proprietorship, you can do that without having to go form an LLC. I try to keep people or get people to take the simplest approach and to prove out these business concepts before you create a whole bunch of crap, right? And because I mean, nobody likes to deal with that kind of stuff anyhow, but to make it hard right off the get-go, you're already going to be pushing against some gravities that are pretty immense. You don't want to create paperwork and filings and create these traps that you're going to obviously walk into. So the magic number would be you're really not necessary to do an LLC until the risk or the assets go above between $500,000 and $1 million. Then it's time to be able to create an LLC, put those liabilities and those assets in the LLC, create some separation, and then, you know, obviously you won't mind having the different tax filings and the costs that go along with having an LLC. So that's Joe's response to it. I'm not big on just popping up and creating tons of LLCs that then you have to be a master to. Use it as a tool like anything else. Don't abuse it and don't create an LLC every time you want to create a business, unless, like I said, it has a ton of risk involved. And then obviously if you're seeing risk when you're opening the company, then absolutely use that LLC for the tool in which it was created. So if you were driving your company across the seas and you know that there's some stuff that could go wrong and you don't want to lose your house or your cars because of it, that's a really good reason to create that segmentation. Okay, so from a capital or a liability, since we're on the liability thing, number one thing when people sit down and we talk about funding and financing operations, debt is one of the bigger considerations. And I basically talk about this in two ways. You definitely have some companies that take physical debt as part of normal operations. If you look at everybody that's listed on any of the exchanges, public debt is almost like universal. Everything from Amazon to Tesla, all of the companies that you see listed, stock is basically debt on the books that's used for expansion. And then it's not proper debt where it's not funded debt. It's basically a debt to shareholders and investors. And some of the biggest companies could not grow or buy land or, you know, add to their facilities if they didn't have the access to other people's capital in exchange for a premium on that capital. And so it's absolutely – now, as a sole proprietorship, as a small business, I don't want you to go take on a bunch of debt and then if a business fails, that the debt follows you around, right? And so that's what the only reason that I'm not opposed to debt, but I'm just a little bit resistant to tell people to go get a bunch of debt. I'm proof of concept first. So go prove that you can get orders, prove that your product has legs, prove that you can get customers, prove that you can hire employees, prove that you can do it first without taking on a bunch of debt. So if you want to run, if it's $1 million company, go make it be a $10,000 company first that you can run out of cash, right? Run not out of cash, but run through cash. And then if you're capable of doing it through cash. Remember, that $10,000, you could be your own bank. So you're the bank of Joe with $10,000. Pretend like you're lending it to yourself, and can you return it with a premium? If you can, right, then it would be a good investment. Then the bank's going to give you some money. Now, if you run through the $10,000 and you need more, then you need to contemplate, because if you need more, it's probably because that's just the beginning of the iceberg as far as money goes. And you know how many companies come to me after they've starved themselves out of operating capital and they need more capital and they have no way of getting that capital, and they have a good idea, they have great business, they have great orders, but guess what? They ran out of cash. And so I don't want anybody to get suffocated by having that extra weight on them. Go make it work small scale, and then you can ramp it up and then use what you've done in the real world to attract investors. Because if you took $10,000 And, you know, on paper, you now know your margins and your ratios and who your customers are. You can take that information and present that to an investor, and now you're more likely to get better terms on the investment anyhow to get the money you need to finance. But take your money first, because I'll take someone serious who's got skin in the game, right? If you put $100,000 of your own dollars in it, and you could show me the books of what you did with the $100,000, then I could kind of see what you're going to do with my $100,000, and then we have a much better conversation. But if it's like, hey, I got this idea, but I ain't got no money, I'm way less likely, unless it is off the charts. You know, it's something that I know a lot about anyhow, and then I can see if I run. But you're not going to get away with owning much of that company if you've got the idea and you've got no cash to support it. Most of the time, you're not going to own more than 50% of that if you've got no skin in the game. So that's my official thing when it goes. I'm not debt averse, right? And or opposed, I should say. It's just not going to be my first thing is not to go get a loan, right? Because it's not time for asking for money. If I wouldn't lend to me, then I'm not going to ask other people to lend to me. I'm only going to be sure that if I came to me with that offer, it's not all emotional, that it's going to be, even though there's no proof of it, it's going to be so great. Yeah, I'm not, you know, not down with that. So 330-729-9977. Let's see. Pricing my products when how do I price my products when my dad opened the business and his pricing is lower than the competition? That is an interesting question. I might actually talk about this for a minute and carry this over after this break. These successions, and I'm telling you that when you have succession planning, or having one generation taking over from the generation that started the company, or I've even seen third and fourth generations take over companies. Every generation has an idea about how the business should be run. And most of the time they were secretly plotting what they would do different if they were in charge. So a lot of times when you get the succession happening, it's a bunch of those things like raising pricing, changing customers, changing industries, adding products to the industry. And part of me says that, okay, if you're operating in the business under the controls of the previous generation, you probably know enough about the industry to know maybe your new ideas will work. But even, just as an employer, when I get presented with something new, a change that's pretty radical from how my operations, remember, when you make a change, you change your model. Or most of the time, your revenue changes, your scheme changes because of operating new. It comes with all kinds of unforeseen complications. It also can come with great advantages, and you might stumble on something that's even better than the product before. But again, same advice as the last one. I will use it as R&D. I will take 10%. And I will do all 10% to the new product. I won't give it more than 10% attention. I won't give it more 10% versus all of the money they can take, the energy they can take, the labor they can take. I'll give it 10%. And if it proves out on a level of 10%, then I can grow it up and take more of the company procedure. But I would take what you know exists and defend it a little bit and have it finance what you want to do next. You're listening to the Bottom Line Business Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back.
I want to be a billionaire so freaking bad.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I am Joe Danier, and I appreciate everybody joining me on this Saturday to talk about this stuff in business. It really does. Like I said, I love this area, and I love what's happening here. And I think I'm going to dedicate some of my professional life here to kind of coaching the area to both be more permissive with what happens. I have to tell a better story for you. Okay, so I have to tell you what's really happening so that we don't give in to the dramas of where media-led narratives would take you. Because I believe in you people, I really do. And really, whether it's government, it's people. Whether it's companies, it's people. Cops, people. Teachers, people. All of it's people. All of us are the same. So we all make mistakes and do stupid things, and we all, are genius and have super abilities to change the world for the better. And what brings that out is the narrative, what we decide what it is that we're going to be, what we decide the story that we're going to tell. So this week we have Lordstown Week. I'm going to make an appearance over at the Lordstown facility. That's an exciting part of town because we have
something that I am already attracted to, the electric cars, and to couple that with a battery plant. We have the seeds of some successes that we're going to be realizing. And I know you've read a bunch of stuff about change-ups at the Lordstown Motors hierarchy. And whereas I think that, okay, it's worth noting that, you know, we'll see what comes down the pike from it. We'll see how we're able to keep on board and keep supporting and keep telling the story. So you get to have an objective observer. And I know I'm a fan of business and that whole industry. So the eyes that I go in there with are, you know, wide open to the possibilities and the opportunity that it presents. At the same time, I want to know really what's going on. And I'm super quick to disbelieve what is popular and flowing around. And I think that's why my voice has been trusted in this area as it is, because I'm, you know, I might be, like I said, I really do share, you know, where my biases are going to be. And when I want to talk to the chill can guy, I mean, I want that to succeed. I don't care how far gone it is. So, but I don't want, you know, and it's going to feel like I bring all the, you know, we attach a lot of energy, but to something is going south. But I want to catch these things way earlier, and I want to get more involved in making sure that if they don't, you know, they don't go radioactive, because I think I feel that there's a couple of these things that just go beyond what PR can get you out of and what telling the story can get out of. And once people decided that something's bad, then it's hard to bring it back from there. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to bring Joe's real perspective about what they're doing out there. And I am fascinated when big things, stuff that I could never even imagine myself being able to do, happen. And, you know, it was like I went out to Kennedy Space Center and looked at all of the facilities and everything that goes into launching rockets. And I'm looking around, I'm thinking, and if I put all of the resources of my operations, see that red door over there? I might be able to buy that red door, right? And so everything scales beyond what I'm capable of, impresses me, because I'm thinking, if I wanted to do any of this, how would I even do it? And a lot of it goes beyond what, you know, individuals can do. So when it comes to the Amazons of the world and the big companies, they're able to do these unimaginable things. And it's the choreography of talent and labor and infrastructure that's a talent in its own to build and do scalable large things, where most of your small businesses are led by an owner, right? So the tyranny is what makes it happen. The someone who can overrule and object and has complete control over everything. What happens when you have an operation that goes beyond a single person's control? Then it becomes the structure of that company that makes it win or lose. And that's a lot what you see. You see good companies that die by management, and you see bad companies that excel because they have good management, and everything in between. So I'm a big fan of anybody or anything that comes to this area and wants to lay down some innovations in our lap, and I want to support them, and I want to do whatever it takes. And that means sometimes snapping people up and making them do smarter things. Doesn't mean kicking them out of town and pouting because I didn't get my way, or it's not my perfect flavor of what I wanted to see happen. If there's someone who's willing, I mean, that's half the battle right now. And I want to make sure that I support them. I will do my best to ferret out whether or not you got a stinker because someone's just a bad person or operating terribly or using our support. I'll sniff that out in 2 seconds and punch them in the jaw, right? I don't play with that kind of stuff. But anyway, I hope that I'll be back the next week to give my dissertation on what I saw out at Lordstown Motors and see the progress that's being made out there. And again, still a big fan. All right, next coming up on the Youngstown Computer Show, I hope you guys will stay tuned. I'm going to dissect a scammer call that came in this week. And I have a whole series on scam baiting where I go toe-to-toe with some scammers and then I record the whole thing. And that way we are going to talk about how these scams go down and what they're intending to do. So stay tuned. Youngstown Computer Show coming next here on 570 WKBN.